the Spot Track Podcast, talking sports contracts, the salary cap, and business of sports.
Welcome to the Spot Track Podcast. My name is Mike Gennetti. It is Monday, April 22nd. NFL Draft Week is here. It's a big NFL show. Keeping it short and sweet, though. Look, we got a couple of days to do these pods. The rumor mills are swirling everywhere except the number one pick, which appears to be locked in with Caleb Williams. I'm looking less at who's going, and I'm looking more at how much it's going to cost. The big discussion behind the scenes with anybody in this field, financially speaking, is how will the NFL actually treat this current class of rookie contracts? For those who don't know, the rookie wage scale was pretty wildly suppressed over the past 3 to 4 seasons with COVID, as part of the buyback system, as part of the just controlled process that the league took with its finances, which you can understand to some degree, except, right, the revenue has been outstanding. And there was maybe that 1 year hit and the salary cap was reduced accordingly. The league kept tight this 1% increase on signing bonuses with the NFL draft picks. And the first round picks especially were pretty heavily impacted by this. So the Bryce Youngs of the world, the 2020s, the 2021 draft class, heavily impacted by a very, very tiny increase in terms of what they could earn on their guaranteed signing bonus. If we go back to 2020, Joe Burrow's bonus was $23.8 million. Trevor Lawrence's bonus was $24.1 million. Trevon Walker's bonus was $24.3 million. And Bryce Young's bonus was $24.6 million. All right? And the reason I'm highlighting those is that's the major factor with these drafted rookie contracts. All 4-year deals. The first rounders get the 5th-year option, of course, as most of you should know by now. But it's a big bonus. There are some increased base salaries for the first two and a half rounds. And then anybody in the late 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round are on the minimum salary wage scale for 4 years. Okay. Everybody's earning a minimum salary in year one. Everybody. So there's really no impact in terms of what the salary is. And that's CBA driven, by the way. So that has nothing to do with any kind of increase that the salary cap has, et cetera, et cetera. That's just the going rate for what the CBA says it is. And this year, for all first year players, that's undrafted free agents, that's drafted rookies, et cetera, $795,000. That's up from $750,000 last year. We know what it's going to be for the next 7 years. All right. From this year through 2030, you're talking about $795,000 this year and a little over $1.06 million in 2030. That's in the CBA. There's a big table. We've got that table on SpotTrack.com in our CBA section for those of you looking for a little bit more nerdiness this week. But that's just how this sort of works. All right. So for 3rd to 7th round picks and for UDFAs entering the league, you're talking $795,000 this year, $960,000 next year, a little over $1 million in 2026. And then if you've got that 4th year as a drafted player, $1.2 million in 2027. That's what the next 4 minimum salaries look like for players that enter the league this season. So it really is about that bonus, to get back to that. We have projected the same 1% increase on these bonuses that the league has given out for the past 4 seasons, because the league has not told anybody, ourselves included, otherwise yet. My guess is that the projected numbers that you're seeing on SpotTrack are going to be low. So I want to be transparent about that, because quite frankly, nobody else is being transparent in this league right now. And we're 4 days away from this freaking draft. Now we're months away from these draft picks actually signing, even though it's pretty cut and dry at this point with the rookie scale. But before I go out there and say that Caleb Williams is about to lock in a $24.5-25 million signing bonus, I just want it out there that there's a very good chance that because of the balloon in the salary cap, because of the revenue that has been already hit the books, And because of the revenue that we know it's coming, right? The health, it's not just current health. There is forecasted, pretty much set in cement, outstanding future health for the next 5 years. I think the league can safely say that, knowing, at least knowing a little bit now what the gambling money looks like, that more and more of these NFL states are lighting up gambling, right? Green lighting gambling, that the playoffs have been expanded and are probably going to continue to be, that international games are now on the books basically for half the league. And obviously that the streaming stuff is not going away, because the international game to start the season is on a streaming network. We're getting at least one playoff game on a streaming network. That's additional revenue that the league didn't have 12 months ago. So to look around and say that things aren't great would be ridiculous. Things are outstanding in this league in comparison to really any other league, certainly in America, but really across the world, not named major soccer, right? Let's just say that. With that being said, again, I'll go back to it. Right now, we're projecting about 9% of what the salary cap increased, which has been, it's a little low. I can say it's a little low. We run the numbers on the league salary cap. We run the numbers on the rookie wage scale. We try to find the trends. We have numbers that we in mind that we know it should be. And I can tell you right now, there's a very real world where Caleb Williams' signing bonus is not the $25 million that we're projecting, but something that looks a little bit more like $31 million, $30.5 million. So I'm here to tell you right now that based on what we're posting on our draft tracker, Caleb Williams might make at least $6 million more. That's what the league has told us with their salary cap increase. And it's certainly what the writing on the wall has been with the revenues reported and projected for the past couple and future next five seasons. So it's a bit of a sliding door right now. We're looking for some confirmation. I've reached out to really as many people, more people than I've ever reached out to with any single scenario. Let's put it that way. And I'm hoping that there's a little bit more transparency with this, because we want to be right. I don't want to be sitting here on projections Wednesday night when we all wake up Thursday looking for this part of the equation, right? Which is not only where are these players going to go, but how do those players being drafted impact the salary cap, at least from a hold standpoint, and then eventually when they sign June, July-ish, what's it going to actually look like for the next 4 to 5 seasons on each team's salary cap? So just I wanted to get this out on a Monday morning cup of coffee transparency session, that we're looking at basically the lowest common denominator of what we've posted. And we're aware of it and we're sticking to it for now. But there is a very, very real world where we're about $5 million off with those first couple of draft picks in terms of what the actual signing bonuses might be. And I hope so. And by the way, soapbox for a couple seconds here. I don't agree at all with what the league has done here. Now, you want to tell me that the league salary cap has to fluctuate a little bit because there were so many unknowns with COVID. That's fine. You had to suppress this. The biggest value maybe in all of sports, which is this NFL rookie wage scale, right? You've got players making almost $60 million by the end of this summer on an annual average basis. And you're talking about players that from a base salary standpoint, right? We're about to draft 257 players, and there's about 250 more UDFAs coming by Monday morning, right? That's just what the next week looks like. And you're telling me that the league minimum is still $795 and that signing bonuses don't really approach $31, $32 million yet for any of these players? I mean, pick 257 based on our current math offers a signing bonus less than $80,000. It's a 4-year contract at $4 million. That's Mr. Irrelevant. That's the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers right now, guys. All right. So don't tell me that those are irrelevant picks. We're seeing more and more seventh rounders starting in secondaries. We're seeing more and more sixth rounders starting as offensive weapons. Everybody's just getting good at this stuff. All right. And they should. It's an analytical sport, especially when it comes to this kind of thing. So this is one of the best values in all of sports, and the league suppressed it heavily over the past few, 3 to 4 seasons. I don't believe that will be the case this time around, but I'm here to tell you it might be. And I feel bad for first rounders, especially over the past 3 seasons, 3 draft classes that, you know, had at least 500,000 to a million knocked off their contract based on where they should have been with their signing bonus, at least. All right. A good, healthy $3.5 million increase on these bonuses, at least with the top 10 picks, the lottery picks, should be the going rate based on what the league salary cap is doing and certainly where the influx of revenue is coming from. That's not going to be the case. And it's why so many organizations have stopped spending in free agency and started focusing on this specifically. It is too much of a value. Too much. All right. And it's becoming now the vice that most of these clubs are looking toward, because you can now guarantee yourself at least 3 full seasons of maximum value for starting players, and they can't do anything about it until after that 3rd year. That's when extension eligibility finally kicks in. That's where, as many of you are now finding out with Brock Purdy, who is entering year 3 with San Francisco. So this time next year, we'll be talking about something very different if he looks exactly like he has been over the past 2 seasons. But that's what the draft has done. That's what the league has done with the draft classes, with the rookie wage scale. And we're in that moment now where, you know, a bunch of different things can happen. They can keep status quo, increase it by 1%. It'll look exactly like the numbers you're seeing on our draft tracker right now, which is Caleb Williams will sign a 4-for-$38.5 million contract that includes a $25 million signing bonus. Okay, that would be status quo still coming out of COVID. They can go back to where it was pre-COVID, which gets us closer to a $30 million bonus for Caleb Williams. Or they can balloon the hell out of it as they did with the league salary cap this year, something I don't necessarily agree with. Because we saw just how disastrous that was for the NBA. And I would imagine if you interviewed any single front office exec in the NBA, they would say it was an absolute mistake on our part and we should have smoothed that process over 3 to 4 years. Well, the NFL just did it again too. So are they going to follow suit with the rookie wage scale, or will they smooth that increase, which I very much disagree with? All right. Again, these players are already not making enough money when you're talking about the league as a whole. So I hope to some degree, the rookie wage scale sees a good cushion, a good bump this year, and that at least the lottery picks see 4 to 5 million more of a bonus than I'm currently projecting, and that the math currently says the league has been sticking by for the better part of a half a decade now. So transparency, I'm happy to answer questions. I'm hoping for some confirmation within the next couple of hours. And if that happens, I will hop right back on this microphone, tell you what I've learned, explain the numbers that have been updated accordingly, and we'll get ready for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then a whole bunch of subsequent signings thereafter that certainly align with whatever mathematical formula is brought forth to us. But again, right now, we are at about as low a projection as we can be, certainly hoping that changes over the course of the next 72 hours. Okay, speaking of Caleb Williams and all the quarterbacks in the NFL, current and pending, it was a good time this morning to sit down on the positional outlooks on SpotTrack.com and just look through this quarterback roster. Basically, the quarterback, I looked at the quarterback room for all 32 franchises as a way to say, all right, where are we today? Where are we Monday morning, knowing that Thursday, I don't know, are 10 teams about to change the course of this position for them? If not this year, certainly by 2025, that might even be low. All right. There's 6 names being thrown out there as possible, if not probable, first round picks, you know, and if it's 4 and the last 2 are maybes, why wouldn't those teams try to slide into the back end of the first round to at least get the 5th year option built in to whatever decision-making they have, all right? I mean, Yeah. Does that bite you in the butt sometimes? Yes. But all you can, you know, all I can do is say no to that fifth year option. And you're into a situation that you have at least more control over. So I think the likelihood that six fall into the first round is extremely high. Having read the room a little bit here with each one of these teams, right? So Arizona, I'm just going to run through this quickly because the article I just posted on SpotTrack.com offers absolutely no analysis. Okay. It is truly, here are all the quarterbacks on a team and here is everything about their contract that I know and that I can project for you. All right. Not in sentence form, in list bolded form, because that's really all I want to offer here. All right. There's no reason to analyze Kyler Murray's status because we all know what's going to happen. Nothing for 2024. He is the quarterback. I've given you how much is left. I've given you what the practical outlook is. And for certain instances, and I included him, I offered what the contract says about when he could be released and when he could be traded. All right. So in his case, releasing Kyler Murray isn't really on the table until maybe 2027, probably 2028, because of the structure of how things work. But trading him could happen right now. Right? If something goes ridiculously haywire and an unbelievable name falls to Arizona at number four, and they say, my God, we got to do this. And they know they have a trade offer out there for Kyler Murray to Minnesota, let's just say. It would not surprise me one iota. Okay. It would surprise me a lot. But now having looked at the contract, it's a very tradable contract. All right. Not going to happen. But that's the nature of the process that I took here, okay, with most of these bigger contracts is what's left? What's left that matters? And what's the release and trade outlook if that ever has to come to fruition? Now, I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying those are possibilities. I'm saying it's just part of the conversation. That's it. I think Arizona's done here. It seems like it. It seems like this is all about defense and weapons for the next couple of weeks here. Kyler Murray's the starter. I would assume Desmond Ritter's the backup, and that's fine on non-guaranteed 2 years. And they've still got Clayton Tune on a non-guaranteed 3 years. I think we're good. That was more of an example than an analysis on Arizona. And I would imagine Atlanta's in the same boat, right? Kirk Cousins at minimum 2 years, $100 million. Okay, that's the minimum. So what I'm saying with that is he plays out this year and next year, and then Atlanta buys out the $10 million guarantee on 2026. I think that's a pretty logical outlook here. And it's something we're seeing a lot more teams do. And there's a few more iterations of this down the list as we go along, where instead of impacting salary caps in the first two seasons and cash flows in the first two seasons, we're just going to add a smaller guarantee into year three. And if we have to pay that out to see him walk away, that's fine. It's built into our process, but we're able to manipulate the cap and cash flow a little bit by extending things out to that third year. Taylor Heinicke was restructured, renegotiated really, to stick around as the backup on basically a $1 million guarantee. He'll earn a little bit more than that if he's active and has to make an impact at all, but that appears to be the room. You want to tell me to pick up a UDFA as a camp body? Of course. You know, many teams are going to do that this offseason. Baltimore. Obviously, Lamar's locked in, right? I mean, the contract structure makes him unreleasable for the next three seasons, 4, 5, and 6. I'm not even going to get to the trade stuff with Lamar because he's a freaking MVP. So I'm not going to do this, but it's there if you need it. I'll tease the article. Malik Cunningham, Josh Johnson are the current backups in the room. I would imagine Cunningham is right now the QB2. They're both at about $1 million and probably both stick for a while here. Could be a UDFA situation for sure in Baltimore. Just try to find that next backup. Buffalo. The Josh Allen contract is not as strong as I think many want it to be right now. And we kind of knew that going into it, that this was pretty awful team friendly from a structural standpoint, even though he was about to make a hell of a lot of money. There's 5 for $190 left, but from a guarantee standpoint, it's really just a 2 for $70. And if you want to tell me that Josh Allen is injured or his play falls off a cliff, I know there's a lot of people that don't want to hear that. This is a releasable contract after 2025. So there's a world where this is a 2-year contract and Buffalo can just walk away from this thing. that's not a big world. It's a very tiny world, but it's possible. And it's certainly a tradable contract after this upcoming season. Not so much right now because of the recent restructure, but 5 years left, but I wouldn't call those 5 years stable. Let's put it that way. Mitchell Trubisky was signed for basically a 1 year, $2.5 million backup contract. Perfect. Fine. Carolina. This is a big one. They have pumped the offseason money into this roster, certainly into the trenches on both sides of the ball. It's just about fortifying Bryce Young at some point, keeping him on his ground or on his feet, excuse me. And they've added a couple of weapons. I expect the draft to be many more weapons. They got him for at least three more, fully guaranteed. And then there's an option in 2027. Andy Dalton's on a $2 million guarantee this year. I imagine that's the room. Is there a late round draft pick here? It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a late round draft pick here. Chicago. So I've implemented the number one overall pick as part of this plan. Again, I'm projecting about a 4 for $40 million, fully guaranteed plus the option. It's Tyson Bagent and Brett Rypien behind him on non-guaranteed contracts. Obviously, they don't want to put anybody in the room that's going to make Caleb Williams feel like he might not be the guy this year. That is clear as day. So this is his team. I'd love to see a more experienced veteran in this locker room. I think it's a mistake, but I'm not the one making the decisions out there. That's for darn sure. So there's a very clear path with what the Chicago Bears have done here, and I don't think they're going to change the course right now. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow. 6 years left on that contract, four of them basically fully guaranteed. You can't even begin to talk trade until after two more seasons because of the five-option bonus structure that they utilized here. So it's just not feasible. It's also not feasible to have the conversation. Jake Browning is back on his exclusive rights free agency, 1 year, $915,000. Certainly looks the part of being a good backup in this league, at least for a minute here. So no complaints there. Cleveland, one of the more polarizing situations that we've had to talk about here for a couple weeks now. It's 3 years, $138 million left on Deshaun's contract, fully guaranteed. That does not make him releasable in any record, but he is tradable because it is all base salary. And that's what we talked about a couple weeks ago, is they have not converted his upcoming base salary in any regard. Now, maybe they push a little bit of it to signing bonus to get some of the draft class signed. Maybe not. But this contract is 100% tradable right now. If at any point in time over the next now or three seasons, that becomes a possibility. Jameis Winston was signed to be the backup. This team has a surplus right now of at least guys who have a chance to be able to play for a week or 2 weeks. It's Jameis on 1 for $4 million, fully guaranteed. Dorian Thompson-Robinson on 3 years, non-guaranteed. And then they signed Tyler Huntley away from Baltimore on a one-year contract as well. So maybe some room for, I don't know, a small trade, a late-round trade. We'll see what happens here. Dallas, obviously the reason we started this conversation at all. It does not appear, now that Dak Prescott is officially talking out loud, that an extension is imminent. That's at least how I'm reading the tea leaves. He appears to be settled in on, I have 1 year left in my contract and we'll see where things end up next March. This is how it's always gone for Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. So it's not news to me. I don't think they're going to let this guy get away, but I'm not dumb enough not to look at the rest of this roster and understand what's happening here. Okay. It certainly makes Trey Lance's acquisition a little bit more poignant. Trey Lance is fully guaranteed at $5.3 million this year, and Dallas has about 2 weeks to decide on his 2025 fifth-year option. I don't imagine that they're going to take that option because of what it would cost, all right? There's a sizable void dead hit on Dak Prescott at some point in time here. Trey Lance would cost them $22.4 million fully guaranteed to exercise that option by May 2nd in 2025, okay? That seems to be too much for a player who, you know, hasn't given us six good weeks in the NFL. It's not inconceivable that Trey Lance is plan B, all right? If Dak won't give on the contract that he's asking for, And Jerry Jones decides, we're not going that route anymore. All right, we're going to take our medicine this coming off season, take on the $40.4 million hit, which is what the voided dead cap is on Prescott's contract next March. And we're going to walk away from this. There is no franchise tag for Dak. The void structure doesn't allow it. There's a full no trade clause. So Dak has say in whatever happens over the course of the next 12 months. This is just life in Dallas. And I don't think it's wrong. It's not a hot take. It's not me trying to pay my bills to start looking at what the next option could be. I don't believe Dallas is going to do something in this upcoming draft because Cooper Rush is on a non-guaranteed one-year contract. And I just gave you Trey Lance on a fully guaranteed at least 1 year. And we'll see from there. There's options. They're not good options. They're certainly not great options. Dak is absolutely the best plan for this team. But there may be some growing sentiment inside this organization that paying Dak top dollar is just no longer the best way forward for the Dallas Cowboys. And if Dak doesn't want to give, then Dak becomes Kirk Cousins next March. And he's probably good for it because he knows the money's going to be there and he knows opportunities will be there with probably very, very strong franchises. And Dallas may have to reset their reels a little bit with potentially Cooper Rush, Trey Lance, and or a draft pick this year or certainly next year. So I'm just preparing that it doesn't appear imminent. And these are the options going forward. And none of them involve Dak Prescott under control. All right. His contract will expire and he will be a free agent, just like Kirk Cousins. It's a very similar setup to the timing and the structure of the contract. So something to prepare ourselves for a little bit here. Denver appears to be ready to go up and give up the world to get their next quarterback. And, you know, that doesn't say much for Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci, both on one-year contracts. Stidham sticks around as the backup for sure. $2 million guaranteed on a one-year six. He may even start the year, you know, but depending on who they land on. But that's what Denver's doing. It's the Sean Payton era, so it's going to be aggressive. Detroit has not extended Jared Goff yet. It doesn't seem like that's quite in the docket, right? They've got Taylor Decker and a few others probably in front of Goff, but I still assume this gets done. And if not, then Goff is going to join Dak Prescott on the open market outside of a franchise tag for Jared Goff, which I suppose could be in the conversation here. You know, that's not something we're talking about too much. There's no void years or anything like that in this contract. They're just going to kind of keep it as is. I'm assuming an extension is coming. And when it doesn't, and we get to week one, now it becomes a much bigger story because it's a solid quarterback pending UFA. Green Bay, very similar, right? Jordan Love is certainly an extension candidate. I would say one of the bigger ones left on the market here. He's got a 1-for-11, basically fully guaranteed, thanks to a bunch of escalators. Are they going to roll the dice on this and make him prove that he is this guy for one more season? I wouldn't hate them for doing it. I don't know why Jordan Love would play on that, though. I think he did enough, truly. The escalators he hit should tell the story, right? All these things, if you look on our breakdown on SpotTrack here, there are a hell of a lot of really impressive earned escalators. And yes, it was one season, but I'm controlling my destiny with this player at age 26, locking him into a four-year guarantee that doesn't even get him to 30 years old and taking my chances with that. Now, his agent is a monster, right? David Mulligata from Athletes First. That's your Mahomes guy. That's your Deshaun Watson guy, excuse me, and many of other quarterbacks. So this guy knows what he's doing. Athletes First in general has handled plenty of contracts. So it could be a very difficult process right now to kind of understand where the value of Jordan Love sits after just one really strong season. But I'd be shocked if we get to September 1st and Jordan Love is still on an $11 million contract. Houston's good to go. Again, a team maybe with a little bit of a surplus. CJ Stroud certainly locked in. Case Keenum on a small guarantee for 1 year seems to be the QB2. Davis Mills on a one-year contract could be a trade candidate, at least as a backup for a team that might be in need. Indianapolis, back in the conversation with Richardson, certainly looks the part if he's healthy. And they signed Joe Flacco away from Cleveland on $4.5 million fully guaranteed for the upcoming season. So that is certainly the QB2 in Indianapolis for 2024. Trevor Lawrence has had discussions. I'd be surprised if something gets done because if I'm Jacksonville, those discussions are lowball discussions because of the recent resume and lack thereof, unfortunately. If Trevor decides to take something like that, good for him. That'll certainly help the Jaguars situation. I'd be betting on myself if I were Trevor Lawrence. I would play out my fourth year. I would make them exercise my fifth year, which they're certainly going to do either way. And then I've got one more good offseason to get something done after hopefully a much better 2024 campaign and walking into March with a better resume to start negotiating with. So if it gets done, it would surprise me a little bit. If it gets done and it's a top of the market contract, I'd be floored. But crazier things have certainly happened. Mac Jones, by the way, also on this roster. Fifth year option decision, May 2nd. Absolutely not, right? It's a 1 year, $2.7 million guarantee for him to be the QB2 and an able QB2 for this Jacksonville team that is certainly looking to compete in this division for the 2024 season. Kansas City. Mahomes has 8 years, $361.5 million left in this contract, but really it's four for 205. That's what we're looking at. That's what this renegotiation kind of got us down into. And it might even be earlier than that. All right. Because that takes him to age 32. The salary cap is going to be $300 million+. However, right, he made almost $60 million cash last year. He'll make a little bit more than $45 million this year. And then the cash flow is 50, 56, 53 through 2027. So the cash flow is outstanding. All right. And then it drops off a table after that based on this negotiation, 27, 35, 45, 48 later. But those years are unbelievably fluffy, no matter how you kind of slice this contract up. So the contract reads as four more seasons and then we'll start over at age 32. I wouldn't be super shocked if after 2026, his age 31 season, if he's still Patrick Mahomes, even what 90% of what he has been for the first six seasons, I wouldn't be shocked at all if we start over then after 2026 and it's one big final last hurrah with him in Kansas City, contractually speaking. Carson Wentz, by the way, on a 1 year, $3 million contract, $2.5 million of that fully guaranteed. He will be the QB2 for the upcoming season. Vegas, question marks. Are they a draft team? All right. There's reasons to say yes, and there's $15 million guaranteed for Gardner Minshew to say no. And the real thing, the real question is, I'm not even sure Gardner Minshew is the starting quarterback, right? Are they going to roll Aiden O'Connell out there and try to let him at least win this job again? He's 3 years, $3 million, non-guaranteed. All right. Did you just make Gardner Minshew the highest paid backup quarterback in football? You might have. You might have, because really this reads as a 1 year, $15 million contract. All right. It's one of those things that has 12 and a half this year and 2.5 next year. And if they got to pay that 2.5 to walk away, they will. Right. So it reads as certainly competing for a starting job. But what happens if they go and draft somebody? What happens if something falls into their lap or an ability to go up and get a guy that wasn't there maybe out of the gate? And it's very possible. Let's put it that way. Now, they weren't in on Russ. They weren't in on a bunch of these players. So I feel like they're somewhat comfortable walking into September as is, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. I also think something is probably in the works to at least add to this room and possibly subtract some current pieces. There's been some hot take memes floating around about Justin Herbert getting moved. I'm here to deflate those as quickly as humanly possible. Not because the player doesn't deserve to be in the best situation possible. I love the player. I've got some questions about the player, but I love the player. You just don't trade this kind of player on this kind of quarterback contract after one season. It just doesn't work in your favor. Okay. Now, if you want to say it happens post June 1st, sure, you'll save $6 million a cap this year. Sounds great, right? So June 2nd, they can trade Justin Herbert to the Minnesota Vikings, who didn't get the quarterback that they tried to move up for. Except that would leave you with a $95 million dead cap hit for 2025. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that's not going to happen. So how about we curb the Justin Herbert trade rumors until, oh, I don't know, after 2026, when the contract says it's actually feasible from a dead cap standpoint. All right. Three more seasons, which is probably right, because that's probably the leash that Jim Harbaugh will get there. Isn't that fair? I think that's about the going rate for a coach in this league right now, or coaching staff in this league. So the bulk of this contract now very much aligns with the coaching staff, the GM, and whatever moves they're going to make over the next couple of years. So if you have beliefs or even some parlay bets down on J.J. McCarthy to the Chargers and the Chargers flipping Justin Herbert over the next 72 to 100 hours, I'm going to tell you that's not going to happen. Okay. Because, by the way, to trade him right now before the draft, $108.5 million dead cap. Be fun. I'd have to do a lot of articles, but no. Los Angeles Rams. This is a draft team for me. I know Stafford has 3 years, $94 million left. I know it's basically $41 million fully guaranteed, including $10 million next year, which became fully guaranteed this past March. I think if I read this the way that I read contracts, I think the Rams would be okay selecting a player higher than maybe we think they will, right? Maybe not one of those top six, but you want to tell me the Rams are in on the seventh quarterback? Or you want to tell me if Michael Penix Jr. falls into the second round that the Rams don't go up to get him? That's kind of where I am with this team right now. I believe that they are willing to treat Matthew Stafford as a 1 year, $41 million player this year. Pay off that $10 million as kind of a parting bonus. Now, if he sticks for 2 years and he plays ahead of the drafted quarterback in 2025, that's great. Matthew Stafford is one of my favorite quarterbacks in the history of this game for a lot of reasons, but mostly because he's tough as hell. And he's also cashed in. He has been one of the financial goats that we've been following since 2009, really since the NFL hard cap came into our life. He was the last player to sign a rookie contract before the wage scale kicked back in 2010. All right. He signed a 6 year, $72 million rookie contract with the Lions. And because of the cap implications that came with that, the following year, right, when everything locked down, he just kept getting extensions. Right. So instead of doing void years and all this stuff that's prevalent now, Detroit just kept giving him more money. 6 for $72 million became 3 for $53 million, became 5 for $135 million. And then a couple of years after that, really 4 or 5 years after that, he was traded to LA and renegotiated a 4 for $160 million. So if I just lay it out for you and Matthew Stafford plays out 2024 and gets a $10 million bonus to walk away at that point in time and retire and walk up into the sunset, that's $41 million more dollars attached to $328 million currently earned. There's a $375 million player in this league, which is way more than you may think other players have made. All right. He is one of the Business of Hall of Fame's first ballot unanimous inductees without question. And he's also a pretty damn good, tough quarterback. So you want to tell me he gets two more years? The contract says fine. You want to tell me it's one for 41 and done? The contract also says fine on that. So I'm going to read the room a little bit in this really flush quarterback draft and say that this is the year that the Rams determine that it's time to go up and at least find some sort of inkling of the next man up, because Jimmy Garoppolo on a 1 for 3, isn't it? It seems like Stetson Bennett with his off-field issues won't ever be it. So everybody's sort of on a one-year outlook here on this roster in terms of the quarterback. So again, Stafford could get two more, probably should get two more, but I don't think that's going to preclude this team from making a splashy draft pick. If not Thursday, certainly by Friday. The Dolphins. I'm just under the belief that Tua is about to get a contract. In fact, if you remember, because I do, the Baltimore Ravens went back and forth with Lamar Jackson. And then he announced his own freaking extension, I don't know, an hour and a half before the first round of the draft started last year. So that threw everybody into a tailspin, myself included, certainly, with having to shift gears from all these draft conversations to a massive quarterback extension. I'm hoping that's not what ends up happening with Miami, but I know that they've been deep in negotiations. I know it's close. It's tough to value this player, right? He's young enough and talented enough with a ceiling that could put him into $55 million a year. My guess is Miami wants to be nowhere near that number, but it seems like the length and timing of the conversation for this contract have been healthy. I would imagine something gets done soon, but can we give it like 3 weeks? All right, let's get through the draft. Let's get through the UDFAs, and then let's make it quarterback extension season with Goff and Tua, maybe Trevor, maybe a couple more. All right. Minnesota, obviously a team that is in every single rumor notably possible because they've already kind of geared up for it with an additional first round pick acquired this past spring. Sam Darnold's on 1 for 10, 8.7 guaranteed. He's basically doubling his 2023 compensation to sit behind Brock Purdy. There's a world where Sam Darnold is the week one starter. I don't think too many people would golf at that. I don't think Minnesota has any intention of making Sam Darnold the long-term option here. And, you know, it'd be great to see another career kind of revived, Baker Mayfield style. I don't believe that's what's about to happen here. However, Sam Darnold can certainly win this job this summer. I'm not going to say that's not impossible. And the contract isn't flimsy. You know, it's one of the stronger backup quarterback contracts, sort of right there with Gardner Minshew and, you know, more than Tyrod, more than Jacoby Brissett, certainly more than some of these other QBs that have been tossed around the league a little bit have gotten. So it's a stable backup with potential to start contract. That's the only way I can read it for you right now. New England, the number 3 overall pick, should pay out minimum 4 for 36, right? Based on our signing bonus discussion. And that certainly includes the 5th year option. Jacoby Brissett was signed to a 1 year, $8 million contract, 6.5 guaranteed. So just a little bit less than what Darnold locked in with Minnesota. Probably a similar situation. You know, we're not even positive that New England is taking a quarterback here. Or if they do, will it be at number 3? We don't even know that. You know, this might be a team that trades back, selects somebody later in the round, and just decides that we need more than just a quarterback to fix this team. So a lot of moving parts. Brissett's contract tells me I'm probably not going to start, but if I do, I'm not the best value in football. Let's put it that way. New Orleans, it's another one of those could be oneers, could be one and doneers. Derek Carr, yeah, they did a huge conversion on his salary because it's New Orleans. You can't read into that. All right. I saw a lot of people who said, well, look what they did to their dead cap over the next couple of years. This is the wrong team to be saying that about. All right. They live by that kind of life every year, all year, constantly. They will make moves that pushes the line down and down and down and down as much as humanly possible. It's just the way they do business. You can love it. You can hate it. You can just deal with it, which is what I do every single year. Derek Carr's got 3 years, $120 million left. It could very practically be a 1 year, $40 million contract, whereas he plays out his fully guaranteed salary this year and they buy him out next year to walk away. Like Stafford, I would assume he gets 2 more years unless he's absolutely god-awful this year. I would also assume there's another quarterback coming on this roster. And this is not a team that is flush with draft picks, but they take a shot on a mid-round player. I don't think anybody would gawk at that right now. And that's not going to immediately push Derek Carr's status off this team. Let's put it that way. Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. You can read this however you want to. In fact, my God, when they signed Drew Lock, the world kind of said, whoa, 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 is Daniel Jones even going to play? Because Drew Lock has had a moment in this league. You know, it hasn't been 17 weeks, but he's had a moment. And the original report on Drew Lock's contract was, $12 million, $10 million, something in the Sam Darnold conversation, if I remember correctly. Well, it's a 1 for 5 and it's fully guaranteed. That's the base value contract that certainly comes with incentives if he has to start. I'm not going to discount any of the conversations that have been thrown out there, all right? Because Daniel Jones has a massive injury guarantee on next season and is rehabbing from a massive injury last season. So it's not like we're all only talking about Daniel Jones and his production. Okay. There's some protection here. There's some insurance here that the Giants have to at least be considering with the moves they make and with how they treat their starting quarterback position in 2024. It's just good business to do it that way. I believe Daniel Jones will be the starter. I don't believe that the Giants will forfeit their next two drafts to go up and get one of these top six quarterbacks. That's not how I'm reading this right now. And in fact, Drew Lock is the reason I'm reading it that way. Because if you believe that starting over starts with the quarterback position, I don't agree with you. Okay. This is a good offensive line. They are not flush with weapons, certainly not since losing Saquon. And now they've got a Darius Slayton holdout, and they don't even know if their tight end's going to play football anymore. There's a lot of issues. All right. But the defense is pretty strong, and they bolstered it with Burns. And the O-line, I know, has played poorly, but has been constructed the right way and should improve. That's where I'd be focusing my draft. Weapons and trenches. Weapons and trenches. Weapons and trenches. And then Daniel Jones should be affable. And Drew Lock should be doable as at least a one-year holdover. You want to tell me a completely, you know, craters, and this time next year, the Giants quarterback position is completely up in the air? I'd believe you. Daniel Jones can be moved on from as long as he's not injured and can pass a physical. Drew Lock will be a free agent. Tommy DeVito will be a restricted free agent. I don't think anybody's worried about that too much. Dak Prescott might be a free agent. Jared Goff might be a free agent. And we have another solid draft. Not as good as this year, but another solid draft full of quarterback projections. I think it's, let's get through this current year with the Giants in the quarterback position. And how that happens remains to be seen, right, with that Jones injury guarantee. But I don't believe this is a team that's looking to be aggressive at this position at all over the next 12 months. The Jets signed Tyrod Taylor to a two-year, $12 million contract, almost $9 million of that fully guaranteed. He's been as reliable a backup as you can find in this league. And good for them. Good for the Jets doing this as early as humanly possible. It was one of the first free agent signings I put in. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers' status has to be concerning, right? I mean, I know everybody's saying all the right things, and everybody kind of wants this thing to work for 1 year. I'm not saying Super Bowl, but I'm saying we want to see Aaron Rodgers with the Jets, with the team that's been constructed on his behalf, at least out there for 18 weeks. I don't think that's too much to ask. It's really all it is. There's 2 years, a little under $76 million left on that contract for Rodgers, but it's a 1 for 38. And then we'll see with his career and with the Jets as a whole. But at least having Tyrod in the back pocket is a better situation than what the Jets have had. They keep saying they're trying to trade Zach Wilson on that $5 million guarantee. Certainly they'll decline his fifth-year option here coming up here in a week or so. But you're probably going to have to eat a portion of that Zach Wilson contract and move him anywhere else as a backup quarterback this year. There's a $4.4 million training camp roster bonus built into Zach Wilson's contract. So, you know, are you eating most of that as a Jets front office and making him a $2.5 million player this year? That'll probably get the job done, you know, and then you can move him for a seventh round pick. I assume something like that happens within the next couple of days. You know, I don't think Zach Wilson is unplayable, but he's probably your second or third option. He's probably your third option. Let's put it that way. Are there teams right now staring out there that need Zach Wilson? No, definitely not. Could Chicago add him? Sure. Could Carolina add him? Sure. Outside of that, it's kind of slim picking. All right. It's kind of slim picking. But I expect something to move on Zach Wilson. Otherwise, he's just a pretty damn expensive QB3 for sure. Philadelphia, man, are they loaded here? Not with a ton of talent, but with bodies. Jalen Hurts has 5 for 235 left. It's 4 for 184 practical. You know how the option bonuses work. He basically is unreleasable unless they start declining those and take on huge dead hits. But it's a tradable contract because of that, because every year is essentially an option. Even if the option's guaranteed, really all it is a high base salary, which is tradable. So if the wheels fall off, and by the way, last year wasn't great. If the wheels continue to fall off in Philly and it starts becoming Jalen Hurts' problem, it's a tradable contract after 2024. And that's not a hot take. That's just me reading the structure of this thing. And it's really how most of these option bonus structured contracts work. Not really releasable, but certainly tradable. They added Kenny Pickett. He's got two for $4.5 million fully guaranteed. And then there's a 2026 fifth year option as well. Russell Wilson or Justin Fields? We have no idea yet. Don't believe anything you read. Russell's on a fully guaranteed $1.2 million veteran minimum contract. Justin Fields is on a fully guaranteed $1.3 million. And I guess the real thing, right? I mean, certainly the draft is important for Pittsburgh here coming up, but what are they going to do with Justin Fields' fifth year option? Which again, May 2nd is the deadline on that. And $25.6 million would become fully guaranteed in 2025 if they exercise it. Is this Russell Wilson's team? I don't know that they know that yet. My inclination is because Pittsburgh didn't have to give up the farm for Justin Fields, right? A sixth round pick that could become a fourth if he plays 51% of the snaps. My inclination is that they would decline the fifth year option. Don't lock yourself into something that you have absolutely no clue on. Give yourself the chance to keep Fields or keep Wilson after 2025, but with no contractual obligation, right? So my assumption is we've got two nice quarterbacks on one-year contracts that combine for $4.4 million of cap and cash this year, right? That's what this is for Pittsburgh. So if you think that these moves were terrible for the Steelers and that they're never going to win the division and that they're never going to, it doesn't matter. Okay, this is a $4.4 million risk from a cash perspective and a cap perspective. You can do a hell of a lot worse. Let's put it that way. San Francisco, they get one more unbelievable value year out of Brock Purdy, who is non-guaranteed at 900 and change thousand this year. They added Josh Dobbs on a $2.2 million guarantee and brought back Brandon Allen on a one-year $2 million contract as well. So QB1, QB2, QB3. At really just north of $5 million this year. That'll work. Seattle brought back Geno Smith on his up-in-the-air guarantee for 2024, but it is now fully guaranteed. He's on a one-year $22.5 million practical contract, which could be two for 48, especially with some incentives. And then they acquired Sam Howell at two for $2 million, non-guaranteed for the next two seasons. Look, if this works, it's great value, right? Because Geno's on one of those middle-class contracts. Didn't look like he was going to take the next step last season, but this is a kind of a new regime now in Seattle, and we'll see what those kind of numbers look like after 2024, but plenty of outs for sure. Not a team I expect to be active in this draft at this position. There are plenty of other holes to fill, but could align with the Giants where they kind of go all in on the current regime this year and then may have to blow it all up next year and start over. Tampa Bay, Baker Mayfield. I'm not going to lie, guys. This is very similar to Seattle and to the Giants and these other conversations that we've had here. I know Baker got three for 100, but this is one of those built in some second year guarantees that could act as a buyout if that's the way we want to go here, right? This could be one for 40, which is really just a glorified franchise tag, as we talked about when the contract came out. It could easily be a one for 40. And then it's truly a start over plan, trading Mike Evans, the whole process. I don't want to go that route. I want Baker to get two for 60 out of this thing at least. Then we go from there. But it could very well be a one and done situation where they're just trying to push back in, win this division again, sneak into the postseason, try to do some damage. If it doesn't happen, right? If the wheels start to fall off midseason, this is going to be one of those conversations we're having, is what's going to happen with Baker Mayfield next March, when things start to look a little bit more like it's going sideways and not forward. Boy, did Tennessee put some confidence behind Will Levis this offseason. Trades, free agent signings, draft moves, the works. If the kid can play, he's going to be value because this is year two. 3 years, $4.8 million for that fully guaranteed. He's not a fifth-year option candidate as a non-first rounder. There's a lot going here. And they could probably bolster some weapons in the draft in the next couple of days here. And this is a team to watch for sure. I put Indy and Tennessee very squarely in the my interest is peaked category for the next 6 months or so. And I'm hoping Will Levis works out because they've had a couple of bad years here with the downslotting of Ryan Tannehill, completely swinging and missing on Malik Willis, who probably gets released this offseason. And Will Levis, Mason Rudolph, probably your 1-2 punch entering September for the Tennessee Titans. Finally, Washington, the number 2 overall pick. We don't know where that's going to be yet. You know, I feel 99.9 confident on Caleb Williams, as I think the world is. Number two is still pretty up in the air, which is good TV for the NFL Network and ESPN and ABC. But that number two pick should come in at about 4 for 37 minimum, hopefully more like 4 for 40. Fully guaranteed plus the 2028 option. They brought in Marcus Mariota on really a $5.5 million guarantee, which is more than I was expecting for that player. But I guess you can understand it. He's kind of the adult in the room there now. Jeff Driscoll, Jake Fromm, really on just non-guaranteed camp contracts. So it's the number two pick in Marcus Mariota. That's really where we're headed here. There's no reason to believe otherwise. It's just simply who are they going to select? And that's why we're doing it this week. That's it. There's a subsequent article to go with this, talking about all these numbers that I just wrote down. Again, there's no analysis. I gave you the analysis here via the podcast, but again, I try to keep this as information-based as humanly possible, because I'm not sitting here trying to say that Kyler Murray should be traded. I'm simply telling you that the structure of his contract says this and not this. Same with Justin Herbert, same with Deshaun Watson, same with Dak Prescott. Questions, hit me up at SpotTrek on Twitter, on Threads. SpotTrek.com for your NFL draft coverage, for the contracts that are currently projected. Any kind of updates, I'll let you know. We'll be tracking every single draft pick. We'll be tracking every single UDFA. We will have salary caps updated as much as humanly possible. And oh, by the way, I buried the lead. A facelift on SpotTrek.com coming this week. I know that's always threat level midnight for most people, right? And I hate it as well. It's so, you get so used to something. My God, it's been, I think, 10 years on this current design, this previous design. 10 out of 16 years now, we've had this single facelift. And we're changing things up a little bit. Not a ton, okay? The table structure is for the most part of the same. I'm hoping the mobile experience is better. I think we're giving you a little bit more on the homepage to work with in terms of information and lists and things like that. Give it a minute. And then when there's something you absolutely hate or we're missing or is broken, obviously, please. info@spottrek.com by email, @spottrek on Twitter. You can DM me. Those are wide open. We want to make this thing as good as possible. We're not trying to exclude anybody. We're not trying to piss off anybody. It was just time from a code standpoint, from a database standpoint, from a server standpoint. We're trying to improve all these things at once. It's a big site. There's a lot of data here to deal with. There's a lot of moving parts to deal with. So there's going to be a bug or two. There's going to be a few things that we missed. There's a couple things we took out purposefully, I think for the better, but any comments, positive, negative, keep them clean. Let me know. We're trying to make this thing as good as possible, and it's not something we do often. So I know we're going to be inundated with some nasty words here and there. Positive, constructive criticism, please, because I want to make it as good as possible. So that's coming to your screens, tablets, mobile devices, desktops, probably within the next 24 hours. So I appreciate your patience and your comments, because we're trying to keep this thing moving forward as much as possible for as long as possible. For Scott Allen, my name is Mike Gennetti. Thanks for listening to this edition of the SpotTrek Podcast.